This is Neil Boggs inviting you to Meet the Press.
Meet the Press, America's press conference of the air and winner of every major award in its field, is a public affairs presentation of NBC News.
Our guest today on Meet the Press is the new chairman of the Congressional Joint Economic Committee, Senator William Proxmire, Democrat of Wisconsin. His committee this week began extensive hearings on the president's economic report, with testimony from some of the nation's top economic officials. We'll have the first questions now from Richard Harkness of NBC News.
Senator, you said this week that you thought the administration was guilty of a monumental goof because it underestimated the cost of the war in Vietnam last year by $10 billion.
That's not precisely what I said, but it's close to it.
Oh, all right. You'll buy it.
Yes, indeed.
Well, then let me ask you, here you are, member of Congress. You have Appropriations Committee with subcommittees on the military. You have Armed Services Committees, your own Joint Economic Committee. Doesn't Congress know what's going on, or is it impotent to find out about this $10 billion
subject? Well, this is exactly the point. The Preparedness Subcommittee, under the chairmanship of John Stennis, knew that the figures, or thought the figures, were wrong, and said so. Stennis spoke on the floor of the Senate repeatedly and pointed out that the administration was grossly underestimating the cost of Vietnam. But his position was refuted, denied by administration spokesman. March 23rd, 1966, for example, long after we knew we were going to escalate to the extent of 400,000 troops in Vietnam, Secretary Fowler said that he stood by the estimate that we would spend $10 billion in Vietnam, period.
And
now, just to think how big an error that was. A $10 billion error. They estimated the war would cost $10 billion. It cost $20 billion, and this threw off all of our economic policy, because, of course, we didn't realize how much the government would spend, and therefore we didn't curtail other programs and failed to give the tax increase the consideration it might otherwise
have. Well, now, how do we know that this year's war estimates are valid?
Well, we don't know. Now they tell us that the assumption that they made in early last year, was that the war would be over in mid-67, in other words, June 30th of this year. Now they say they aren't making that kind of an assumption. And furthermore, the estimates just offhand seem a little more realistic, but there's some question about this. This is the reason why I've asked, I'm happy I've been joined by Tom Curtis, the ranking Republican member of the committee, that we get quarterly estimates from the Department of Defense and from the administration about the cost of the Vietnam War. Now, if we'd had those last year, I'm sure they would have had to come in with updated figures that would have given us a far better notion of how much we were spending in this area, much more muscle behind curtailing elsewhere.
Well, could it have been that last year being an election year that neither the administration nor Congress wanted to face up to this hidden $10 billion?
Well, I think the Congress wanted to face up to it. As I said, Senator Stennis is a Democrat. I think Senator Stennis may have been up for election last year. I think he was. But he made no bones about the fact it was going to cost that much. I don't think there's anything... any political liability involved in the war costing more. There are many people who oppose the war, whether it costs a lot or costs a little. But the great majority of people, I think, feel that we have to spend whatever it costs out there.
Senator, there seem to be two prevalent economic theories here in Washington these days. One, lower interest rates, which would pep up the economy. Number two, the president's proposal to raise taxes, which would sort of be a tranquilizer. Isn't this contradictory?
Well, it's contradictory to some extent, and I feel in view of the status of our economy today, with automobile sales off, with housing in real doldrums, in fact, in a depression, not much growth for the last two or three months, with new orders not increasing, all kinds of economic indicators pointing down, that this is the wrong time for a tax increase, and I think July 1st will be the wrong time for a tax increase in all probability. And I think also that we should ease interest rates and provide more money for the economy.
Thank you, Senator Proxmire. We'll continue the questions now with Mr. Rowan.
Senator, you've just said that the president's tax proposal at the moment is a wrong policy because of economic conditions, the economic situation that faces us. On Friday, a high administration official told a group of reporters privately that the basic reason for the tax increase was to assure that the Federal Reserve would not return to a tight money policy. Do you think this is a valid reason for the tax increase? Would you accept that? You think Congress will?
No, I wouldn't accept it. I don't think Congress will. For one thing, I should have been more expansive in my answer to that last question, because I should have pointed out that that in my judgment, we can and should cut spending, which will have the same kind of fiscal effect. And I think that Chairman Martin, at least, and perhaps some other members of the Federal Reserve Board would welcome that kind of fiscal action just as much as they would an increase in taxes.
Well, are you persuaded that the current policy of the Federal Reserve to make money easy, to pump more money into housing, is a policy that can be continued without a tax increase?
Well, number one, I hope that is their policy. I'm not yet convinced that it is. I think that it certainly can be very helpful. And I'd like to point out an interesting development here. You know, the traditional economics is that if you make money dearer and make interest rates higher, that prices are restrained because people spend less money. I think what we should recognize is that the highest increase in the cost of living last year was in services. And one-third of the entire increase in services was because of the enormous jump in the rate on mortgages. It increased something like 14% or more than 14%. Now, this year, I think it'll be possible to ease that situation and to increase the likelihood people would buy homes without increasing prices, because the supply is there, labor is there, the construction industry is waiting for it, it's been depressed, and I think that this would not be inflationary, and I think it would tend to keep prices down as interest rates themselves kept down.
But you're not ready to pay the price, as it were, of a tax increase in order to assure this ease in money.
I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's at all necessary, and I would prefer to pay the price by cutting the space program, cutting public works, bringing four of our six divisions home from Europe, which we should do anyway. And I think that these policies would have the same kind of fiscal effect and put the president in a position where he could move much more rapidly without a congressional action if he felt the economy needed stimulation.
Senator, how do you distinguish these suggestions from those of your Republican counterparts on the Joint Economic Committee? Sounds very much like Republican policy.
Well, the Republicans agree with me, I'm happy to say, in some of these respects, but not in all. I find that they're less critical of the space program than I am. I find they're much less critical of the public works programs than I am. I find that they're much more willing to reduce the programs on manpower training, especially within the OEO, the Office of Economic Opportunity, than I am. I think that those programs are deflationary.
Mr. Johnson.
Senator, the President's Council of Economic Advisers has acknowledged in its report that the stability of our financial markets was, quote, endangered by the tight money policies of the Federal Reserve Board last year. Did your committee know about this at the time it was going on?
Well, nobody knows really very much about what the Federal Reserve policy is going to be in the future. And Chairman Martin, rightly or wrongly, has been able to maintain this position. Many people feel it would be wrong if he tipped his hand by announcing in advance that they were going to follow a tightly restrictive policy. You just have to wait till it develops. Therefore, the committee, and I suppose everybody else, including the president, was in the position of not really knowing until after the fact. We did have, as you imply, virtually a financial crisis in August. We were in a very difficult and delicate position. At the same time, I do think there was general approval, with some very conspicuous exceptions, Senator Gore, Congressman Patman. There was general approval of the feeling that under the circumstances, the Federal Reserve Board was faced with a situation where they had to have somewhat tighter money than they'd had before, but they went much too far.
Do you believe they went much too far?
I think they went much too far.
How could they have avoided it?
Well, they could have avoided it by not just turning the economy around, turning the money supply around as rapidly as they did. They'd been increasing the supply of money at a rate of 6 or 7% over a period of a number of months before this. They went from that almost overnight to a situation of reducing the supply of money. And, of course, this resulted in a very sharp and quick and swift increase in interest rates. It resulted in almost shutting down home building. I think if they'd eased into that more gradually, it would have been more desirable. And I'm not at all convinced that it would have been so inflationary, because two of the big elements in inflation were the rise in food prices that had almost nothing to do with interest rates, and the increase in mortgage rates, which of course was aggravated by the tight money situation.
Your predecessor at the Joint Economic Committee, as Chairman Wright Patman, wanted much more congressional and administration control over the Federal Reserve Board. Do you think this would be desirable?
Well, I think that the Commission on Money and Banking, established by President Kennedy and including some of the outstanding people in money and banking in this country, in some of the top bankers and so forth, recommended what I think would be a very sensible adjustment to make the appointment of the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board coincide with that of the president, to limit the terms of members of the Federal Reserve Board. I think that this is the kind of a situation that would be wise. I think also it would be most helpful if Mr. Martin would not only confer with the Secretary of the Treasury and the Council of Economic Advisers and the Budget Director, but also bring some of his other members along with him, because he doesn't act alone. He only has one vote out of seven on the Federal Reserve Board, and I think they all ought to work together with the rest of the quadriad.
Mr. Drummond.
Senator Proxmire, I'd like to return just for a moment to this 100% $10 billion miscalculation of the cost of Vietnam based on the premise that the war was going to end in June. Such a miscalculation to a layman is just inexplicable. I wonder...
I agree, and it is to this layman, too.
Well, to what do you attribute making such a miscalculation? Have you any even inadequate explanation of how it happened?
Well, I'm sure my explanation, Mr. Drummond, would be inadequate. But I'd say that the only notion I have here, in view of the fact that Secretary McNamara is probably the ablest and most competent man we've had in this position in many years, he's a man who's particularly meticulous about his estimates and his figures, is that sometime before this, it had said that they wanted to keep the cost of the Vietnam War down to this level, and then they just decided they wouldn't go ahead and announce the full implications of what their decisions were.
You have indicated...
Furthermore, we should have been more persistent. Our committee should have been more persistent, members of Congress, in demanding a figure, not just the statements which Secretary McNamara did make, that it might cost more than $10 billion. You didn't know how much more, it would be more. I'm sorry to interrupt
Not at all.
Let me just say that they even skipped making the usual semi-annual revision of their estimates. They didn't make that at all, and we shouldn't have stood for that. We should have insisted that every quarter they update their estimates.
This leads me to the next question. That is, you've indicated that you think that quarterly revision of the budget presentation might at least minimize such miscalculation. Now, do you get an impression that the administration is responsive to this proposal? And if not, would you be inclined to support legislation to make it mandatory?
Oh, well, I would be. I would hope that the administration will be responsive. I see no reason why they should not be, especially in view of the fact that I don't see any political liability at all in announcing what the cost of the war is, and I see enormous political liability in having a figure which turns out to be so overwhelmingly wrong. I think it would make good, solid political sense for them to make as accurate an estimate as frequently as every 3 months.
I'd like to ask very much of a layman's question about your committee. I assume that one of its purposes is to, as an instrument of public education. I've just wondered whether your committee or you yourself have considered the merit of taking your hearings occasionally to the country. That is to say, holding joint economic committee hearings in different sections of the United States and getting local witnesses and not just the same old faces that appear year after year on the Hill.
I think that's an excellent suggestion. We have a number of subcommittees, too, that might do this. We have a new subcommittee under Congressman Bowling, and Senator Ribicoff is going to be on that, studying the economies of the cities. And I think that kind of a subcommittee could very well go into the various cities to hold their hearings, and I think that many other hearings could do this, because, as you say, this committee's primary responsibility, its main function, is a matter of public education, as well as congressional education. I hope we can do that.
Mr. Harkness.
Senator, at one time, you were sharply critical of Lyndon Johnson as senator. You even challenged his leadership as head of the Democratic majority. How do you size up this man, President Johnson?
Well, you know, I said at the time I was critical of then-majority leader Lyndon Johnson that he ran the Senate like an executive agency, as if we were executive employees. He didn't consult with us. He told us what the policy was going to be. We didn't have caucuses until after I'd made my protests, and then we had very few. He determined policy. Well, now, I thought that was wrong for the Senate, because we were all elected from our states. He was elected from Texas, and we should have had a real consensus of what the Democratic majority wanted and have that as the party policy. However, I think that as an executive, he's in an ideal position. He has the kind of force, the kind of drive that I think is desirable in a president. Of course, I disagree with him on some policies that I've already indicated on this program, but I agree with him on many more than I disagree. And I think he's an excellent president, doing a good job. I agree in general with his position in Vietnam, with some significant exceptions, but I think he's been a fine president.
This is a change of subject, Senator. As somebody put it the other day, this is a theological question. Is the wage price guideline dead?
Well, it might as well be dead if they don't come in with a figure. This notion that labor should exercise restraint, business should exercise restraint, is meaningless. This is the kind of thing that was done under previous presidents. It didn't work. We still had the cost push inflation with big wage settlements followed by big prices followed by big wages. I want to just call our attention to what happened in 1962 when President Kennedy succeeded for the first time with this wage price notion, and Big Steel was persuaded, the steel union was persuaded to make a claim was within their productivity increase. And when Big Steel came in, Mr. Blau, and said he'd suggest a $6 increase in steel prices, President Kennedy was able to go to the country and make an effective plea for a rollback. And I think that that had an effect for 4 or 5 years, not only on steel prices, but automobile prices and throughout the economy, not only in terms of the snowballing effect of steel, but also as a bellwether. Now, this we've lost. If you don't have a figure, you don't have much.
Mr. Rowan.
Well, Senator, isn't there, to follow that up, isn't there an essential difference between now and 1962 and the Kennedy-Blau situation on steel, in that the market then apparently wouldn't support a steel price increase? Whereas the reason that we're given for the dropping of the guideposts is that it isn't realistic to expect that they'll work.
Well,
wages are going up and prices are going up.
Well, Mr. Owen, I would emphatically disagree on the basis of all of our experience with steel prices that steel pays much attention to the market. They've been able to increase steel prices when they've been operating with 70% of capacity or even 60% of capacity, and I think that that they could have easily held that $6 price increase because of the whole nature of steel pricing, because of the price leadership of U.S. Steel. Within a matter of one week, every other major steel company, every significant steel producer would have matched that price and held to it.
Well, it's a matter for history, I suppose. Looking at this year, do you think that we're going to have inflation or recession? You said you were against the tax increase proposal because the economy was on a knife edge. Which way do you expect it to fall?
Well, I'd like to say one thing that interests me about that tax increase proposal. That's inflationary all by itself. Of course, the effect of it and the economic theory is that it would take money out of people's pockets, they'd spend less and so forth. But, you know, it's pretty hard to convince a common sense voter that I'm going to help you with inflation by increasing your taxes so you pay more. And I think that we could very well have both a fall off of production and even a fall off in jobs and a rise in prices. We had that, as you'll recall, in 1957-58, and the economic situation is quite similar to what it was at that time. That's what I'm deeply concerned about.
If the situation overall looks this black with so many horrors ahead of it, how do you explain the remarkable bull movement in Wall Street so far this year, which has seen a recovery of almost half of last year's market collapse?
Well, for one thing, I'm not sure that you can trust the stock market to evaluate the economy with precision. For another thing, I think you put it in the right perspective. They've discounted what they expected to be a serious recession. It didn't develop. At least that's the only way you can explain a 20% drop in the stock market. So this kind of a comeback is hardly an indicator that business is pretty sure to be so good in the coming year.
Mr. Johnson. Senator, those wage price guideposts have come under a lot of attack from both business and labor over the last few years. And yet the other day you said that the guideposts are one of the easiest things for a Democrat to defend. Why did you say that?
Well, I said that because I've found again and again that when you look at the price record of the Kennedy-Johnson administration between 1961 and 1965, it's been good. It's not only been good, it's been remarkably good. It's been the best of any industrial country in the world, the best we've had in any period of growth and expansion to my knowledge. The average increase in prices was 1.2% in 61 through 64, and not much more in 1965. And when you analyze and go behind it, you find that while wage costs increased about 1.6 or 1.7% between 1946 and 1964, that under this wage price guideline system, that wage costs only went up 0.4%. Now, I think that this meant that it was possible for labor to get a return because their wage increases did go up as their productivity went up, but it was also possible to keep away from the wage push or the cost push element in inflation. I think it's been most successful.
Were you also implying that some of the administration's economic policies aren't very easy to defend? And
well, certainly. I agree with many of them. I agree, as I say, with the manpower training emphasis and so forth, but I would certainly disagree. I disagreed with the tax cut in 1964, and I disagree with the proposal for tax increase this time. I don't think that's easy to defend. And I disagree with the, of course, you can't blame the administration completely, but the monetary policy has been a policy that hasn't worked out satisfactorily.
Gentlemen, about 3 minutes remaining. Mr. Drummond.
Senator Proxmire, if you could draw a lesson from the experience of the last year, a year and a half in our economy, would you say that in retrospect it might have been wise to have increased taxes last year instead of seeking the same end through tighter money?
No. No, and I'm glad you asked, Mr. Drummond, because I think that that would have been the impression from what I've said. My position is that we should have cut spending last year. I put in a whole series of amendments to cut it. I voted against the whole public works program. And I think if we had done that, it could have had the same fiscal effect. And it wouldn't have had the bad psychological effect that a tax increase could have had. I think that that would have been also, as I pointed out, a tax increase that has a little element, at least, of inflation involved in it itself, because you have to pay more.
Well, it seems to me that there are two sides to the new economics, namely that we may at times be able to decrease taxes to stimulate the economy, which is normally easy to do politically, but it seems awfully difficult politically to use the other side of the new economics, namely to raise taxes to restrain the economy when it's needed. Is this a danger of being able to apply politically only half of the new economics?
This is a real danger. Professor Buchanan at the University of Virginia has written an excellent article on this. You're absolutely right. It's popular to cut taxes. I voted against the big tax cut, as I said, in 1964. I think that, on the other hand, it's relatively easy to let interest rates go because you can blame the bankers, you can blame Wall Street, you can blame all kinds of people for it, and not blame those of us who are in government who should take the responsibility for it. Tax increase, everybody knows you're the one who increased their taxes, and therefore it's difficult for a member of Congress to vote for it.
Mr. Harkness.
Senator, there's a somewhat vicious rumor going around town about you, that you get up every morning and do 300 push-ups, have breakfast, and then jog 4.5 miles to the office. Would you like to scotch that report?
Well, I do 300 push-ups. I don't do them in a row. I do 75 push-ups, then other exercises, and 75 more, and so forth. And then I run 5 miles to the office and take a shower. And then I run home at night the 5 miles, too.
Sir, my profound admiration.
Well, you don't live longer, Dick, but it sure seems longer.
Senator, back on the guideposts, is your committee going to try to fill the gap that you suggest now exists in the absence of a specific number? Do you think we should have a 5% guidepost this year, for example?
Well, I certainly would like to. I think a 5% guidepost would be a lot better than none. I hope that the committee will try to fill the gap as much as it can, but no committee of Congress can begin to fill a gap that the president provides.
Well,
the president can get on television. The president represents this country as a whole. He can have effect. We can't.
Well, Congressman Royce, I believe, suggested that the committee itself could hold hearings or investigate procedures by which it could help set guideposts. Is that a...
I think it's a very constructive suggestion. We're exploring it right now. We hope, however, that we can persuade the administration to get back in the act. They can be much more effective.
And with that, gentlemen, our time is up. Thank you, Senator Proxmire, for being with us today on Meet the Press. Now, this is Neil Boggs saying goodbye for Meet the Press and Senator William Proxmire.